I'd like to welcome everybody to the Mesa City Council Study Session for Thursday, November 20th, 2008. I'd like to excuse Vice Mayor Kyle Jones, who's out of town. And we'll begin with agenda item number one. Hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the proposed substantial amendment to the fiscal year 08-09 Community Development Block Grant Annual Action Plan for the Neighborhood Stabilization Program. That's a mouthful. Ray, Carolyn, go for it.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. We're here this morning to seek Council direction to submit the HUD proposed substantial amendment to the FY 08-09 Community Development Block Grant Annual Action Plan. And again, the amendment signifies the city's intent to request for over $9 million in neighborhood for the Neighborhood Stabilization Program funding. And also, today concludes the 15-day public comment period from November 6th to November 20th. And just again, a little bit of background. HUD made available to the city of Mesa over $9.5 million to address abandoned and foreclosed properties under the CDBG's neighborhood stabilization programs. Funds must be applied for, and if awarded, must be obligated within the first 18 months to the date of the award. And we will be working in the 85204 area, plus the surrounding areas around 85204. In addition, besides the measures included in the amendment that we have to meet as far as HUD performances, we're also going to include future foreclosure rates in the affected areas that we're going to measure, along with code violations and Part 1 crimes in that area. And again, you know, there's a timeline that we are having to move forward with as far as the grant goes. And again, these are our partners that we've been working. Several of them are been working here in the community for several years. And this is the proposed activities that we're going to be using with the program. And I just want to reiterate that we kept the numbers basically the same, and the same activities based on what we expect to accomplish in a very short period of time. And one of the things that I need to mention is under the acquisition and rehab, about $2.5 million of that money has to go through to AMI, to 50% AMI area medium income, which a lot of times those people cannot qualify for housing at that level. So we're going to work with that. But the overall goal of the program is to acquire the property, hand it over to the nonprofits, and have the nonprofits work with people to get them in the properties and purchase them over a extended period of time. But that's the intent of the program.
So what you're saying is that rental may actually be some kind of lease-to-own type of a program or something like that, and that's what you're shooting for?
Correct.
Rather than a permanent transient living type of a situation?
Absolutely, okay. Yes. And again, we had a the public comment period that ends today, and we had four additional comments, and those are attached to the end of the actual PowerPoint, just so you're aware of it. And again, our intention is, with council direction, to move forward with the final amendment to the action plan by November 24th, so we can get moving with the program.
Councilmember Richmond, sorry, I was reading.
Hey, thanks for your guys' hard work on this. I know it's been an ambiguous program. It's got a lot of moving parts to it. The federal government isn't even sure how they're administering this as well. And so I appreciate you guys working through this and answering a lot of the questions that I had. I just wanted to make sure that we're very clear that we don't want Mesa to be in the housing business. I think there is a concurrence on the council. I don't want to speak for my fellow council members, but I think Escobedo was sold because we just didn't feel we had a lot of confidence in the way that we were in the housing business. I just wanted some assurances from you that we're not going to be in the housing business as a result of these activities.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay.
Sorry, go ahead. I had another quick question. One of my areas of concern were, and I know it's the amount is a moving target. The target was 62 homes total. And the amount of admin that's required to perform these activities works out to be about $15,000 a home. And if we're not more efficient than that, that's we shouldn't be in this business period. I mean, $15,000 per unit to administer this program, whether it's an acquisition rehab or a demolition or whatever the program is, we need to be much more efficient than $15,000 a unit. Do you have a plan for getting efficiencies out of this as you run the program?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've gone ahead and planned out every process. And one of the things that I just want to make you aware of is that what we're trying to do is we want to make sure that every goal that we set is met, not only by our staff, but also by the nonprofits that are going to be working with us. And we just want to make sure that, and the reason why we applied for so much is to make sure that the general fund is not impacted by our program, and any efficiencies, and we plan on having some, will be put right back into the program. But we just kind of put in a cushion there just to make sure that we're able to manage it all properly.
Great, I appreciate that. I also noticed you had some new performance measures added to your PowerPoint. I wanted to make sure we pointed those out to the council. It's important that in order to, the name of the program is Neighborhood Stabilization Funds. There's certain language requirements when you do these things with HUD, you know, when you do performance measures, and I think they have to word them a certain way and get them in there. But one of the important things I think that we measure and have baseline data for today is our change in foreclosure rate, our change in Part 1 crimes, our change in code compliance, because we chose this area because there was high numbers in each of those areas. So including those in a performance measurement is a must in order to make sure that we're effectively stabilizing a neighborhood. Otherwise, we'll be spinning our wheels and wasting our time. So,
absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Councilmember Summers.
I just want to go back to the rental issue. And what assurances are there that we're not going, as a city, are not going to end up in a rental business, even accidentally? That is, by purchasing a rental property and not having a private or nonprofit step up and take that property, are we going to maintain control of that property? Are we going to put it into some trust and they're going to take over that property? How are we going to make sure that we don't buy a rental unit, nobody steps up to the plate, and Mesa ends up the de facto landlord in any particular case?
One of the things that we've done as part of this process is we've been talking with our nonprofit organizations, and each one has particular areas of interest that they want to be a part of. And let me tell you, I don't believe that we're going to have any one of our nonprofits that are not going to be willing to step up to the plate to take over some of these properties when they become available, especially in particular areas. And as closely as we were going to be working with each one of them, there shouldn't be any issues with handing some of this property over and making sure that those nonprofit organizations were able to handle it.
Okay. So we will be working hand in hand with the nonprofits as we go through and acquire these properties for whichever of the purposes we're using.
That's correct. And we're going to be meeting on a regular basis.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Higgins?
Mayor, I'm still, Mr. Beaver, concerned with the fact that we have so much more money on the line item for the acquisition rehab rental. You know, I know, you know, we say that we're going to change it, but I'm just uncomfortable, you know, I'm a number person. So when I see that number in that line, that always says, you know, that you could fall back and actually have that big a percentage. And I think that a lot of the nonprofits that are on your list up here have proven that they have the ability to go in and, you know, do land banking or whatever to get people into the house and have a higher home ownership. So I'm not comfortable with that big number sitting in the rental box.
Well, the only thing I could say is that the reason why we did it is we put in a cushion, because the biggest issue that we have is the timeline. If it wasn't for the timeline, having to get in there and purchase the properties, rehab the properties, and then getting them sold and getting people in there within that 18-month period, it's going to be pretty difficult to try to do. So what we want to do is we want to be able to allow the nonprofits to do something with that property until they were able to get some kind of home ownership into that property. The other thing that we're having to work with is the market right now. The market is very difficult to get people into some of these properties, and we want to make sure that we don't fall back into the same kind of rut that we did before by getting people in there that aren't qualified to handle these homes and aren't qualified to be able to maintain them over a long period of time. Again, the purpose of the program is for stabilization, and that's what we want to do with it. And we want to make sure that that happens, but we want to make sure that the right people are put in there so the overall picture and the overall part of the program is to stabilize that neighborhood.
I think that as you go through, you've heard the concerns, I think, that are pretty universal on the council. If we could set up, and I can appreciate the time frame and the constraints that you're under, if we could set up a periodic reporting process or coming back to study sessions or whatever to let us know as a council how this is progressing, I think that would work a long way to letting us know how this is going forward. Councilman Richens?
One other thing we never saw in our backup material were the proposals that the nonprofits had submitted to the city. I didn't know if there's any way that we could get those so we can kind of, I'd like some background on what people were proposing and how those partnerships are going to work, what their ideas were, and, you know, we need to really work with them as closely as we can, and so it'd be a nice reference piece to have as we work this program.
And what we'll do is every time we come back and do a reporting, we'll kind of mention who we're working with and what projects they're taking on and the direction we're going with each one of them, if that's okay with you.
Sure. Is each nonprofit, you said that you have to get somebody in there by 18 months. I thought you just had to begin a project by acquiring a property within the 18 months.
Acquire and have contracts signed for the rehab.
So the city or the nonprofit partner has to have made the acquisition. And what do you mean by have contracts for the rehab?
We have to have a contractor. We have to have a contractor under contract for the rehabilitation of the property within 18.
But you don't have to have it sold and heading towards occupancy yet, right?
No, but you'd like to have somebody in mind, something in mind.
Well, sure, mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, we recognize this is going to be a work in progress and that these are guidelines. I think you understand our concerns. Mm-hmm. And we just like periodic updates to see how we're going and how it's evolving down that road, with the idea that we hope that things change in the economy and things change in our ownership potential group, that we can move more toward ownership rather than rental. I think that's fairly universal.
One thing,
yeah, council member.
Just one more thing. I was hoping that in order to measure that baseline data as a follow-up report, after things calm down and you guys make your awards and you get things underway, if we could get a follow-up report that has the baseline data for the code, number of code violations and all that stuff summarized. We have a big chart. We've seen some big charts, but if you could get it summarized into what our general target area, because I know you have the ability to work outside of it, but the code and the Part 1 crime data and the current foreclosure rate for where we generally understand we're going to be working.
We'll get that to you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Higgins?
Ray, I was wondering, how many people do you anticipate working in the city with the program? I mean, because you know, Dave said $15,000 per house is being kept for administration. And I really thought the whole concept was that the nonprofits are going to, identify the program. You know, they do it, they get the money to, and that you would look at how much they need for administration. So for us to say we're keeping so much money for administration, I didn't think we were doing that. Because we're actually not administering, you know, someone's writing a check from the city to the nonprofit, but the nonprofit's actually doing the work. So that's just another question I have.
Yeah, about that. One of the things that we're doing is we're creating a team to put to identify the areas, to make sure that the right properties are purchased, to make sure that we have a planner on board that can see what we're trying to do and trying to accomplish. So we actually have a team that's going to be working together to try to put this together. And the reason why we did that is to make sure that the program is being run exactly the way that in the areas that we want it to work in. And so that's the reason why we're using some of that administration to pay for the time for the staff to do some of that work.
And I think we understand that's the budgeted amount that, right, you know, could come in lower. And also, this is a federal program. And
right,
I don't think it's as easy as just handing over a check, because we don't want to mess up on a federal program, because the downside is a lot more expensive than $15,000 out. But I think we understand that that's your top-line budget, that hopefully will come in below that, because it won't take as much actual administration, but you're budgeting that up front. Okay. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. That help? Okay. Councilmember Fenter?
Thanks. On the last page, it says summary of citizen comments. Four citizens have commented, three general areas. Do we have answers for these questions? Is it now the time to give a brief answer to this, or will we be getting back with those citizens? Or?
Yes, we'll be getting back with them and advising them as a result of those summaries. And those comments are also included in our amendment that we submit. But yes, we will be getting back with them.
Okay. Councilmember Richens?
Are there scenarios where the nonprofit organizations can just be the ones that acquire the property and initiate the project and submit for reimbursement? The city Absolutely. Doesn't have to be the one that requires it.
No. No, the only thing that we would require is an area, and they can go ahead and do it all.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Oh, wait. Ms. Spinner, when they had the original report, I think you can go.
Let me ask a question. Do you need a motion and action?
No, we do not.
Okay.
Because
yeah, okay.
We're just, Chris will be able just to sign up.
Okay,
the
good. Gee.
Who signs like that?
All right. Item number two on the agenda. Hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on budget issues for the current and the upcoming year. Before we get going on this, I'd like to just say a couple things. There's obviously a lot of anticipation about what we're going to talk about today. And this is, we're in uncharted territories in a lot of different ways, uncharted territory in a lot of different ways, but in some ways we've been down this road before, which I think puts us in a much different position than some of our counterparts. I've been talking with a lot of other mayors in the valley, and they are having to deal with financial issues for the first time. You know, City of Mesa, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you look at it, we have a little bit of experience in this. So I want to say I appreciate up front how the staff has approached this problem, and this is no small problem. I think everyone understands that. This is the types of shifts we've seen economically are unprecedented. They are universal. There's not a government unit, I don't think, certainly not in this state and probably not in the country, that isn't feeling severe financial strains right now because of the economy. One of the things that I think as we've approached this problem is that this is not, and we're not viewing it as a short-term problem which demands a very short-term solution. So as we look at this, we're looking at how can we deal with a short-term situation, but also set us up so that we have a long-term solution, because we believe that that the odds are that our world has changed, and that is the reality that we now deal with. So as we go through this, I appreciate the fact that staff has been willing to step back and look at what it takes to make these long-term changes. And these long-term changes really are much different than what we've dealt with before. What we dealt with before was, we have a shortage, what do we need to cut to meet those amounts? What we're looking at right now is not that detailed approach, but to look at our systems, our programs, how we deliver services, with the reductions being the result of changes in programs rather than just looking at changes to begin with. That's a much more challenging prospect. I don't want to minimize the severity from a human aspect. Everyone in this economy is suffering to one extent or another. We have a lot of very good city employees that are going to be directly affected by this, and we don't take that lightly. That's the reality we're all dealing with, and we didn't ask for this kind of task, but it was laid on our desk, and we're going to handle it. We're going to deal with it. We're going to do what we need to do to make this city government as efficient as possible and to provide quality services that we can with the resources that we have in as best manner we can, understanding that creates some very difficult decisions which affect people. And I don't want to minimize the effect on people. both our citizens as they deal with a change in services, perhaps a reduction in services, and also our employees who deal with the uncertainties and the realities of the financial situation that we're dealing with. So I commend staff for really taking a very different approach to this issue. We realize, and as we go through this, as Mr. Brady goes through this, and as we go through in detail over the coming weeks and even months, that there are some fairly drastic changes that we're proposing and that we're going to consider as a council. Changes in the way things have been done for a long time. We recognize that this will create a lot of discussion and differing opinions. And I hope that as we go through this process, we recognize that we cannot hope to maintain what we have without changing what we do. That's just not going to be possible. So to try to defend a complete status quo is just not feasible in the world we live in now. And I think that's the reality that we all need to look at. So as we debate and discuss and consider all these different actions, I hope that the positions that are brought up, the arguments that are made, take into account that we need to move forward, and that means changing the way we do things. And hopefully we'll get the best solution we can that has the least amount of impact on the people in this community, including our employees, but we're going to do what we need to do. So with that introduction, I'll turn it over to Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, Mayor and Council. I think each of you have received the memo that I sent out yesterday. If you don't have it with you, I actually have copies here. Would someone like copies? So I'm going to kind of review some of the elements within that, and then following my comments, then I will turn it over to Chuck and Brian to go through the PowerPoint, which will get into more detail specifics about the economy and the impact on the forecast that we are looking at. As the mayor said, we have, as many people throughout the world, come to the conclusion that we are in the midst of a new global economic reality. And that reality suggests that the way we have done things must change. We cannot attempt to try to take the same way that we've done business before and believe that it will be able to continue in this new economy. For Mesa, that relies upon a consumer-based economy, that has changed in a very dramatic way. So we have taken this challenge and opportunity to really evaluate the way we provide services. You could say that what we're proposing here in many ways is a new service delivery model for local government. We see that as an imperative. It is something that we have been pushed to do. I think we've always tried to be innovative and find new ways to deliver services. I think to the employees of Mesa and to the citizens, over the last 4 to 5 years during these slowing times in the economy, and Mesa's been taking a lot of reductions, there has been an incredible effort to be able to reevaluate, reinvent, re-engineer, and provide significant services, great services, to the citizens of Mesa. But we are faced with a different time, and it has come quickly. Typically, when we have these discussions, we talk about the forecast and the need to make changes in the next 6 months going forward. The change has happened in a very dramatic way. We saw the beginning of this fiscal year, losses or shortfalls in retail sales tax that came near 15%. Already this year in sales tax, we've already are short in the anticipated revenues by more than $5 million. For us, those were really bad years to have that happen. We've seen a significant change then in the economy that has come in a very quick time period. Now, for the city of Mesa, what we need to know about the city of Mesa is that we have planned, if you would, for these times. We anticipated by establishing significant reserves our savings accounts and building those up over the last couple of years and being prepared for times of a downturn. We have been able to absorb these reductions, and we are doing so now. But the rate of decline and the amount of the decline has put us on a track that we have to make corrective action much sooner than we would otherwise do under a typical budget process. And that's why we'll be recommending budget adjustments that have to take place as soon in the beginning of the new calendar year as possible. While we have established significant reserves, those reserves will not be able to continue to absorb these shortfalls over the longer period of time. We also recognize, in looking at the new economic forecast, that while the challenges have existed for most of this, for the last couple years, the dramatic change has begun at the beginning of this fiscal planning year, and we anticipate that it will continue into the next fiscal year. So really our horizon that we're looking at is for 18 months. What you will see is a forecast that anticipates shortfalls to continue through this period of the fiscal year, the next 6 months, and continuing for the full year next year. So recognizing that challenge, the proposals you have before you begin to readjust, realign our services with the resources that we anticipate for the next 18 months. We anticipate that in this fiscal year, at the end of this fiscal year, that our estimated shortfall will be about $33 million. We believe then that the next 12 months fiscal year, beginning in July 1 of 2009, for the following 12 months, will result in another approximately $29 million in revenue shortfalls. So those are significant impacts to our planning of resources and activities. As such, we have taken on the opportunity to really approach this in a different way. We understand that we have done things the same way, in some areas the same way, for many years. We have now the opportunity to really reevaluate how we do things and do them differently. We understand that there are programs and services that we have provided in the past that we will no longer be able to provide. We understand that there are models of service, hours of that we are able to provide services that will have to be reduced. But let me tell you that as I've talked with the employees throughout the city, understanding that we face these very difficult times, the city employees were first concerned about what can we do to save as many jobs for the city as possible. And so the first and most significant reduction that is being proposed will impact all employees with this city of Mesa. We anticipate a savings across the board from all employees, whether you're a patrol officer on the street or whether you're a street laborer who filling a pothole. That reduction of both our 2% across the board reduction, a cost of living adjustments, elimination for our suspension for a year of the performance and merit pay will result in an annual savings of over $14 million. That saves 169 jobs in the city. So the employees of Mesa understand the need to make a sacrifice so that they can keep the jobs in Mesa. There are other cuts, and we'll talk about the total number of positions that are being eliminated, which are significant. I can tell you that we estimate that almost half of those positions that are being eliminated are in upper level management, the management and professional ranks. This has definitely been a top to bottom review. We did not go from the bottom up. It is across the board. You will find the elimination of the positions at the highest levels down to the mid-range levels. Let me just give you, we're not going to have time today, and we're not prepared really today to go in detail for each department's proposed modifications and adjustments or new service models. We're going to do that in the subsequent study sessions. We'd like to spend the next four study sessions to talk about that so that by mid-December we have introduced the changes to the council for your consideration. But let me give you some examples of what we are considering. I've already talked about the citywide reductions across the board for all employees, specifically now for departments in public safety, an area that has not seen really any decrease. While we've been talking about reductions that have taken place in the city for the last 5 years, in each and every year, the public safety areas have actually increased their budgets, and it remains a top priority. In the general fund alone, those resources represent more than 70%, or about 70% of all the expenditures. It is the top priority of the city and will remain the top priority of the city. But we do think it's time to consider how we provide those services. The focus will continue to be on the most critical response services that we provide. And police, that is making sure that we have patrol officers on the street to be able to respond to calls from our citizens. That will continue to be our top priority. In the fire department, our focus will be looking at a new model to address the continued largest demand and growing demand for that service, which is emergency medical services. We are challenging our services in a way that we are going to realign our resources to be able to address this growing demand. We believe it is time to move away from a purely firefighting model to look at the opportunity to maintain firefighting as it exists today, but also find the flexibility and the adaptability to be able to address our growing emergency medical services. We will also be consolidating departments. We'll be merging departments and programs together. I'll highlight one specifically. We'll be creating a new department that we've titled the Development and Sustainability Department. This department will see the combination of the planning department, building safety, and code compliance. And we will also be moving a section of our programs that related to water and energy conservation into the development services, this new development department. While we have done, a very good job of working through public education about the need for conservation, specifically water conservation, we want to continue that, but we think it's now time to bring in that expertise on the front end of development, so that they will be there when new development is being considered in Mesa, and they will be there to consult and advise and encourage the implementation of green building. Another important reason for the consolidation of this department is to focus one group on inspections that we do in the field every day. We will be combining three of our field inspection programs, which will include the current building inspection program, our zoning inspection program, and code compliance. By doing this, we were able to maintain more of our building inspector positions, who will now be cross-trained to provide more code. Will be cross-trained to also provide for code compliance inspections. This is an important way of taking a very valuable skill and resource that today, with the lack of construction, is somewhat underutilized, but being able to retain that skilled employee and being able to use them for the code compliance inspections today that we have today. So they'll be able to do both. We'll be trained to be able to do both of those inspections for now, and hopefully sooner than later, if construction activity comes back, we will have that resource already available in the city. So we look at that as an opportunity for cross-training. There are other consolidations of departments that we'll visit with the council in the future, which will result in significant reductions in upper-level management positions and directors' positions. We are looking at new service delivery models, and that will specifically address the Mesa public libraries. This council knows we have one main library and two branch libraries. And the best way to describe the changes that will take place in the libraries is both through three opportunities. One, we'll see a reduction in the number of hours and the days of service available at the main library and the branch libraries. We'll also be reducing the number of professional librarians that will be available in the library at any one time. And we will also be reducing the book budget by more than 50%, or about 50%. We are going to begin having conversations with Maricopa County. Maricopa County currently collects about $1.7 million through the library district property tax paid by the citizens of Mesa. We would like to approach them about the possibility of assisting us with trying to recover back some of that book budget in the future. We will also be looking at opportunities to realign our programs in the Parks and Recreation area. We will be scaling back many of our recreation programs. We'll be looking at a new opportunities for outsourcing some of our maintenance responsibilities at the golf courses, and even maybe at the conference center. We will be looking at a new program, a new approach to offering the programs, limited as it might be, of after-school programs. The after-school programs that we will be offering will be limited to only those programs that we will be able to maintain within city-owned facilities. And that would be Webster, Jefferson, Red Mountain, and the Washington Activity Center. We will see the elimination of many youth and adult sports leagues. In the pools, we'll be moving to a regional pool system. The pools will not be closed, but during the summer months, when the city does its programming for instructional programs, that will only take place in the regional pools. And those regional pools are where we currently have amenities, or with the pools that are anticipated in the future to have amenities. So today that would be Brimhall, Carson, Shepherd, Stapley, Fremont until the Skyline Pool is completed, Keno, and then Powell until the Rhodes Pool is completed. And then finally, as I have met with employees and talked with them about opportunities to continue to find more cost savings, to also work with the employees on helping them to adjust to this new services and compensation adjustments. And also, frankly, as we've looked at other cities and how they've addressed during these times these new ways of looking at services, we are proposing to the council that we consider moving to a 410 schedule for the majority of the city staff. That's not going to happen across the board for every service we have. We know we have services that need to be provided on Fridays. But it is interesting, more and more both private and public groups are continuing to look at that. It has resulted in savings for other municipalities, as well as a boost in morale. And it has been beneficial in many areas to provide for extended services, hours of service for a variety of different services. So that's something we want to look at going forward. Mayor and Council, this has been a very, very difficult effort. One, because of the magnitude of the challenge, and two, frankly, in the time that we've had to respond to it. This staff has done remarkable things with the conclusion and negotiations of some historic development agreements that we recently concluded, the successful bond package that we recently received from our voters. But in the midst of all that, knowing that we were faced with these challenges, many of the employees who dedicated many hours in all of those efforts will no longer be with the city. And that's difficult. We have loyal and dedicated employees, some employees who may be near retirement, but will not be able to reach that because of these reductions. So it is not easy to do. We have tried to do this with as much respect as we can with our employees by giving them as much notification and opportunities to make changes or to look at options within their own lives. So with that, I've covered kind of the brief overall summary. I'm sure there's things that I wanted to talk about but I missed, but I'll stop there. And I'm going to ask Chuck if he will then go through the PowerPoint, which will then kind of describe in more detail what we've seen in the impact of the economy, and get maybe also cover a little bit more about our approach, and you'll see the actual dollar amounts that are being affected for each department. So, Chuck?
Good morning, Mayor, Council. Typically, at this time of year, we bring a financial model of all the funds of the city and what we're expecting over the next 7-year period out to 2024-25. As the comments of the mayor and Chris have reiterated, we've had an unforeseen and unprecedented drop in our revenue picture. So this year we have altered that schedule. We're bringing back an 18-month window, and we're limiting it to the general fund discussion. That is where we're seeing the unprecedented fall off in revenues. We will be coming back over the following months and bring back our other funds, because some will have to be adjusted. But this is what needs immediate need, and we're going to kind of keep our comments to that this morning if we can. I want to establish what that general fund means to the all funds budget, so you have some perspective of what we're talking about. Give you some perspective on what our resources in the general fund pay for out of the general fund, how much is left for operational purposes, and go through our revised revenue forecast for 08-09, discuss the 9-10 drop off, and then give you some summaries of what our service adjustments are currently proposed at, and go through some of the FTE counts and so forth that we are proposing for reduction. So if you go to slide number 3, this is the all funds budget, this pie. The two pies that are pulled out represent the general fund. A lot of the times when we talk about the general fund, we usually talk about what's the green area there, the operations and maintenance portion of general government. That's what we call our discretionary fund. This morning, we also want to include the chartreuse or pink slice of pie there, which is all the rest of the general fund, which includes your debt service, capital, and your fund balance reserves for contingency. You go to slide number 4.
And Chuck, debt service are the bonds, the general obligation bonds that we're currently paying for out of general fund revenues.
This is our GO debt paid for from general fund revenues. So the next one is our resources that fund the general fund. We have the big three, which is sales tax, enterprise, and the state shared revenues. That's about 69% of the total funds available. That's a total of just over $300 million. And on the next slide, I want to demonstrate where some of that goes to. But as you look, you see after that, we have some fees for services and then our other resources. The significant portion of other resources is we appropriate our fund balance for contingency. That's what those other services, resources are. It's mostly the fund balance that is appropriated. On the next slide, this is where we start going through what our obligations are. No matter what we do, we have to live up to our commitments for the GO debt service. We do have commitments on capital, which is all under contract for leases and some miscellaneous construction projects, the fund balance requirements, and then we get into our public safety and other programs. And what I wanted to point out, if you take debt service, capital, fund balance, and the public safety portion, that adds up to about $333 million. That's $32 million over the big three resources that we've got. Now we get down, drill down into our governmental and operations budget. This is 78% of the general fund total. This is what we call our, I don't want to call them discretionary dollars. This is what we have available for operational program, for delivering services to our citizens. So as you can see, the outside of the pie, or outside of this chart, is the ratio of revenues that we use to support these areas. Sales tax, the enterprise transfer, state shared revenues, the fees for services, and the other governmental revenues. Inside of the chart is where those services or the program areas are. You see police, judicial, and fire is what we define as our public safety area. All the other services of the city are detailed as you go around the pie. Of this total, about 72% of it is personal services. So that leaves us very little discretion on what we're talking about with our revenue decline. Now, on the next slide, we gave you some historic perspective of how we've provided services based on some of the comments Chris had talked about. We've maintained our commitment to public safety over the last several years. We have an upward trend in our budgets. Of the total amount budgeted, public safety has increased the portion. All other programs have decreased in a percentage. I just wanted to give you a little bit of perspective as what we're talking about. Some of the significant drivers that we've had over the last 3 years, it's not we've been adding any services, it's the cost of personal services. We've had increases based on health care, our retirements, those things that we really don't have a whole lot of control over in the marketplace. Now I'd like to move into what's been happening to us. This is where we get into the unprecedented. If you can look at the chart on building permits, everyone knows since last fall we've seen a decline in housing. One of the things, if you look at 07-08, we didn't do too badly. But that was a holdover from the commercial activity. We saw some of this coming, but when the financial markets dried up, along with the housing market, now our commercial markets have seen a significant decrease on available resources to continue commercial development. So we're looking at about a 50% decline in our overall revenues in this area, which I, out of curiosity, knowing how much we are driven by growth, how the other cities were, and this is regional. The state was going at 56% decline, so we're right in the neighborhood of what other areas are experiencing this. It's just unprecedented in the fall off and how quickly it occurred. Almost in June is when we saw. So we saw that in July, we saw the effects of what June receipts were. It was as if someone had turned off the tap in this area. Sales tax on the local basis. This is our general fund sales tax collections under the two categories, the general fund unrestricted and the quality of life. It excludes the local street sales tax. As you can see, we had already budgeted for 08-09 less than what we'd expected or had seen in 07-08. We had foreseen some of this fall off. What happened here in particular is what I believe has happened here is you had the gas prices start just accelerating so heavily on people that are losing their jobs. It just started changing people's patterns on buying fuel, took all their discretionary income, retail sales started to plunge, and you can just see we are now going to expect for 08-09 less actual collections than we had in 04-05.
Chuck, we don't tax sales on food.
No.
But I'm assuming we track sales on food. Yep. And the situation you've stated with gas prices, also the other main component in discretionary income that increased significantly was food prices.
Yes.
Which means that a higher proportion of discretionary income to our citizens goes to gas and food, neither of which we collect directly any revenue from.
Very good.
Do we have any ideas to how much that sales tax on food would be in our city if we did collect that?
Mayor, we used to collect a sales tax on food years ago, and when that dropped off, we've been able to kind of chart that. We believe it's somewhere this year in the neighborhood of $20 to $25 million in value of the sales tax value on the food that we have lost.
Okay.
Just for this year.
So,
and again, that's just an estimate.
But I'm just trying to understand it because this big drop off, basically people are paying more for gas and food, mm-hmm. where they have been. Okay.
Another one of the areas that is going to be heavily impacted for us is the state shared revenues, of which in the general fund there's three primary sources. You've got your sales tax from the state, you've got your urban revenue sharing, which is the income tax portion, and the vehicle license tax. Well, we all know what's happening with vehicle sales, so you're going to see a continued decline until the pent-up demand for vehicles returns. State shared sales tax is experiencing the same decline that we are locally. Now, the thing that is significant about the urban revenue sharing, and I'm going to go a little bit more into it later, is we won't see the effects of the impacts on that, there's a two-year delay. So in 9, 10, and 10, 11, we're going to see a $9.1 million drop in urban revenue sharing, and in the following year, a 6.9% drop from that. So we're going to see some significant hits 2 years out from this economic
decline. And maybe we ought to, because I know this is Greek to a lot of people, as to what's, first of all, why there is state shared revenue, and secondly, why we have this two-year delay.
In an agreement with the legislature, they've allowed a sharing of the income tax collections to the local governments.
Yeah, so, I mean, so we understand. Years ago, the municipalities and the state got together, and rather than have each municipality go after different silos of revenue, like you have in some states where you'll have each city taxing income and things like that, the cities and the state got together and agreed that rather than having multiple collection points, that the state would act as the collection agent for income taxes, and the income taxes we pay for the state really are a combination, and the state remits back to the cities a portion of that.
15% of that pool.
So that was an agreement that was made years and years ago, and they do that also with other sources of revenue, sales tax, gas tax, things like that.
Which is based on a per capita formula.
And the reason why we have a two-year lag is that as part of that agreement, what they determined was that they would, to get accounting-wise and everything, the state would collect an amount, and then you'd take an amount, and once they had a final accounting and whatever, then 2 years later, they would actually remit that cash to the city. So that's why there's a two-year lag. So
that is correct.
In this year, in 08, we're actually collecting the income tax that was collected by the state in 06, 07.
That is correct.
Okay. Just so everyone understands that, because that gets a little bit complicated.
It is. And that's why that delayed response of what we're seeing the economic downturn now.
And in 06 and 07, we actually had a pretty decent economy still in Arizona.
Yes.
So when you look at the income taxes, both corporate and personal, that are being collected this year, we're going to feel a sort of a delayed effect. Even if the economy rebounds in 010, we'll still be hit because at that point in time, we'll be collecting from the state a lower amount because that'll be the amounts that was collected in this down economy.
That is correct.
So the effects are going to be long-term, okay?
And one of the other major areas that we're seeing a significant decrease from budgeted is in our court fine revenues. We're forecasting about a $4 million decline in that area. We're about 11, almost 12% off from activity that occurred in 07-08. We're evaluating why that is occurring. I mean, there's still activity in the courts, but the courts are doing analysis to see exactly what is happening to those revenues. Now let's get into the overall picture of what all these add up to in impact this year in 08-09 revised revenue picture. We're foreseeing, I've got it circled in red in your lower right-hand corner, totals up to $9.4 million that we're estimating coming off of our current revenue picture. As we've talked about, city sales tax, about $13.5 million we're expecting to be down, which is almost 11%. State sales tax, 5.1%, which is $2.1 million. VLT, the vehicle license tax, $2.45 million, 14% off. Charges for services, and we have a lot of the rec programs that are lower participation, those classes, things like that. $1.4 million off, 8.6%. Fines and forfeitures we talked about, 26.2% off, $4.2 million. Our urban revenue sharing, like we talked about, won't change this year, but we'll see it in the future. And then all the other sources, about $81,000 off, 0.2%.
Mm-hmm. And the big one of note is the license and permits. I don't know if Chuck...
I mentioned
that one, but down 40%, and there's the reflection on the building economy and things of that nature right there.
Yeah.
Councilmember Higgins?
On vehicle license tax, is that coming from the state, the 14%?
Yes. It's based on value of cars.
Right.
It declines 16% per year on a car. So if you're not putting new cars into the market, you're going to see a decline of 16% per year based on the existing base. So we kind of forecast with new car sales, that resets that base. Right now, that's not occurring, obviously. So we're going to see a continued decline.
Okay, thanks.
Now let's kind of put it into the overall picture on slide 14. We've got, besides the revenue impacts, when we're talking about our impact fees, this is not in the general fund. This is our general governmental impact fees. We use those for qualified debt service in our GO. So when we decline on impact fee
collections. Okay, hold it. Speak English.
General obligation debt.
Yeah, but let's talk about exactly what it goes for so we can make the connection between impact fees and the debt.
What we do is use those to pay for that debt.
That would have
been paid for.
What kind of items, just so people understand?
Well, for parks programs, libraries.
These are things that when there's a new building built, we collect an impact fees.
Not for operations.
Not programs.
Right.
But the formula set up as a development comes in, there's a certain formula that's established in which they will pay an impact fee. That impact fee then is divided among a variety of different capital projects, parks, in the general fund, fire stations, libraries, public safety. So we assumed each year a certain level of collections of those impact fees. Those impact fees are then used directly to pay down the current general obligation debt that we have, and that's when we rely upon that. Now that we're not collecting the same level of impact fees,
that's correct.
Now we have to use the resources out of the
general
fund in order to make up that difference, and that's the number you have.
That kind of goes back to that earlier slide when we talked about paying for debt service, capital, and
I'd like to get it down even to more basic English. So years ago, voters approved a bond to build a park.
Yes.
Okay. That park is in a new section of town. We went out and built that park and floated bonds to pay for that, assuming that those bonds would be paid, growth would pay for itself, and part of that is that new residents that came in would pay impact fees when they bought their house, or the builder would pay the impact fees. Those impact fees would then be used in part to pay off the bonds that were floated to build the park that served the new residents.
That is correct.
That's part of an ongoing plan. That's how impact fees are working. And we assume a certain level of building that goes on consistently, a base amount of building that goes on that will continue to pay off those obligations. What we're saying is that with the building going down drastically below what anyone projected, that there aren't sufficient funds or aren't as many funds, we have this shortfall that would pay off those obligations. So we got to bring that from somewhere else.
That is correct.
Okay.
So putting additional pressure on the general fund, right?
Gotcha. Okay.
So that in 8-9 will have a $3.6 million impact on us. In 9-10, $4.3 million impact. So with the revenue decline and the impact fees for 08-09, the 29,442 from the earlier page, that's a $33 million impact this year on the general fund in total, as we current information available. Now, if we take it to 9-10, we have that further decline in impact fees, which we'd already programmed in. Estimated net revenue decline, we have another $28.7 million in impact. Now, I've circled the $33 million and the $61.8 because we'll have to, that's the total impact of the 2 years added up. So I'll use these totals later in the presentation. Next page. Now, I talk about current information available because we still have economic pressures that we don't know about. We don't know how much the economy is going to put further pressure on us. We've done our best to forecast that economy, but as you can see from where we were in June with all the best forecasters in the country, they did not foresee the depths that we've gone to. We've used all the available information we've got to try to now set the new econometrics model, but then we also have, because of the hits to the financial markets, the two retirement systems we contribute to will be heavily impacted. I don't believe that we can expect them not to come back and ask for increases for the civilian retirement and for the public safety retirement.
Councilmember Richens.
You threw out a term there, econometrics model.
Yes.
Can we explain that?
We belong to a forecasting group We put most of our, this is where we'd get into the non-English, and I'm sorry, I'll be as simple as I can. We do a lot of statistical modeling on all our revenue for modeling for all our major sources. So we belong to the U of A forecasting group, who provide us econometrics at a state level, local level, and at a national level. We put all those econometrics, they're indicators.
Give us an example of the econometric. What is a variable that you look at that is the cost of goods that we buy at the grocery store? Talk about what's the factors that they look at in something that we every day that we consume or are purchasing?
Well, we'll look at issues forecasting disposable income, forecasted municipal cost indexes, so the cost increase prices, salary levels, unemployment issues,
health insurance
costs. I mean, we use several hundred econometric indicators. So those are just an example. We then model correlators of those individuals against those income or those revenue models.
Okay, so what you're saying is that as we're watching the news, the news says the Labor Department reported this week this, and this study reported this. You see all this data that's thrown into the knowledge base. The unemployment rate, the rise in consumer price index, this and this and this. What you're saying is that we have some really smart people who take all this data, throw it into a computer, and the computer is programmed to look at the relationships between this. You know, people lose their jobs, prices go up, gas prices go up. That computer can then throw out an answer that says, you know what, based on all of these things, we think this is going to happen.
Yes, sir.
And, for example, if you have job loss going up, you have gas prices going up, you have stock prices going down, I'm assuming that the thing's going to spit out said things look pretty bad.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Is that about as scientific as we can get on it?
That is as simple as we can get, yes.
So we participate as a city in one of these services, and we use this. We don't try and do this ourselves. We subscribe to one or participate in one of these services that gets us this information, and we use this within our own forecasting to say, all these programs and these really smart statisticians and economists and everything, they are looking at this, and we try to rely on those as much as we can in formulating our forecasts and our prognostications.
Yes, sir. Very, very well put.
And Mayor,
I had to use a five-syllable prognostications word at the end there. Councilmember Richens.
Clearly, the first problem is that it's out of the University of Arizona, but outside of that... Do all the cities and states in Arizona subscribe to this same model?
No, they don't.
What are the other options for this model, and how accurate were those or not accurate were those in comparison?
I'm going to tell you, nothing was accurate right now. I mean, that's very obvious. Nothing was accurate. There are two services. ASU doesn't provide a service such as this. They provide portions of this. Some cities subscribe to them to do their consulting for them. We don't do that. We belong to the U of A because they provide all the information that we need to do it. And it's a fairly cheap way of obtaining that information. Then we do our own forecast.
It's an inexpensive way to prepare that.
And as Chuck said, most of these are not foolproof, as we've all seen, no matter which ones they are, no matter what level, whether it's national, regional, state, local.
Well, this is a fancy crystal ball.
It is.
And I think we can see that most of the crystal balls, well, I haven't seen a single crystal ball that worked.
Right.
Because we, on a national scale, there are things coming together that nobody could figure.
And this is what we attempt to do. When we see what our forecast is producing, we go out to all the other sources and we start comparing to see how far out of line are we with what we're seeing regionally, nationally, and on the local
level? Well, I would tell you, in talking with other mayors, for example, I don't know of a single other city that I've talked to that forecast a 6% decrease in sales tax revenues for this year like we did.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of cities that forecast flat or maybe 1% or 2% increase, but, you know, we were one of the few that truly went very conservative in forecasting an actual, you know, 6% is a real drop, because if you figure out that inflation is running 2 to 3% a year, we actually forecast about a 10% drop in sales. That was unheard of. There might be someone out there that did that. I haven't talked to anyone yet in the mayors I've talked with.
There is nothing.
So we were fairly, I believe, conservative in our budgeting coming into this year with the revenues that we expected, much more conservative than others were. And we found out that, you know, that was a, that those sales waved past, as they went past our projections down to the 12 to 15% range. There's nobody that forecasts that.
You are correct.
Which means sales are actually, when you factor in some sort of inflation, and although right now we're almost in a deflationary mode, you know, you're looking at a real drop in sales of, you know, 15, 16%. I don't know if anyone would forecast that.
Not with our history.
Okay.
Mayor, before we move off the page, and I think Chuck was going to speak to it, the bottom issue, state budget issues, we have a what we believe is potential a viable method to adjust for our losses, but that's not taking into account if the state decides to dip into the funds to take our money to adjust for their losses. So that's a huge potential. That's
okay,
out there.
Let's explain that also, because once again, this shared revenue is based on formulas. And for example, there's just to round up, there's with certain taxes, we get 15% of the gross collections and the state gets 85%. That is generally held true. And so if the state collects $100, we get 15, they get 85. If next year they collect $90 instead of $100, generally we would get 15% of the $90. What you're saying is that the legislature, and generally that's held true, the legislature may also go in addition to the natural flow through of the drop in revenues collected from 100 to 90, they may change it from 15% to a lower percentage. The state may try to keep a higher percentage. They may try to keep 86% and only pass on 14% to the cities. Now that 1% doesn't sound like a lot, but on a statewide level, that's literally millions and millions of dollars.
If they change the formula by 0.5%, it will mean about $7.5 million to the city.
So instead of 15%, if they only pass through 14.5%, in addition to the drop in collections that is caused by the economy, there would be an additional $7.5 million hit to us just by that half percentage point change, which is possible. Councilmember Summers.
And this is what we have heard from our legislators sometimes as cities sharing the pain. That since the economy is going down, the state is feeling the budget crunch, so the cities should also share in that pain, and so we're decreasing the revenue. But not only are we decreasing the revenue by adjusting from hypothetically 15% down to 14.5%, and sharing the pain, but also the city is sharing the pain because we're seeing a decline in sales tax revenues anyway. So we're getting hit twice, not once. We're already sharing the pain.
And we will be more than happy to share the pain when the other side shares in the pain also. But I'm not going to go further on that. I'll get in trouble.
The next slide, Chris spoke to a little earlier. The compensation adjustments we're talking about in 8-9 will be about $6.8 million. In 9-10 dollars will be 14.4. And that equates to 169 positions based on average salary. So that's fairly significant to what we're talking about. Now we'll get into what we're talking about on our program service adjustments. The first slide, slide 17, is the citywide adjustments. So we talked about the compensation adjustments on the earlier page. We are looking at enterprise fund cost savings and efficient gains of about $5 million. We have other adjustments, which are a myriad of items that I've got the details here. It'd be we refinanced the Hohokam lease, so we gained $1.5 million a year there. We had some public improvements that we'll be paying for out of special funds. And this most significant part of it is transit changes in our delivery of service there and the cost savings associated with that. We had quality of life that we've now included in the general fund. These are mostly salary savings related to specific areas that we're talking about on the compensation adjustment. And then we had one-time capital adjustments and where we're watching all the expenditures in 08-09, we've come up with $7 million in that area and just under $1 million the next year. There's some delay of general equipment purchases of $895,000. vehicle purchases of 1.2, canceling some training classes on fire, which was earlier announced, of almost 1.2. Cost in some of our computer software, because we've gone to some new efficiencies, $820,000. And looking at all of our funding between the funds to make sure we're scrubbing everything and charging appropriate cost. So those totals carry over to the next page. And here we get into where we're talking about the program delivery areas. Police, judicial, fire, parks, library, cultural. The community services we've broken out into two areas because building safety planning and code have been hit so heavily, almost a 41% reduction. All the other community services has kicked in an additional 17.9% under these current scenarios. So we have program adjustments of in 8-9 of 15.9 carried over annualized into 9-10 of almost $40 million. Now, what's significant about these adding these items up is from the early areas where we had the economic impact from 08-09 of $33 million, we had those two-year impacts of $61 million. What we are looking at right now, based on what we've identified, and we've set aside some extra money because we've got problems with purchase or future problems with resources, possibly, and the date of implementation, we're not sure when we can get everything set and started. Most of these cuts were set on a January 1st time frame, so the longer we stretch that out, the less savings we get out of those adjustments. So, giving us a very, very small cushion of about 7.3 and 3.7.
Chuck, I want to make everyone clear that that $61 million is a two-year number.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's not a one-year number.
It's the two-year.
That's the combination of the two, like we said before, because mm-hmm. you could misread this into thinking that's only an 09, 010 number. Yes. That's actually the combination of 08, 09, and 09, 10. Each year,
it's
taken separately,
effect.
Adds up to the $61 million.
That is okay. Correct.
To that point, I guess that's why it's a very good point to bring that up. We will solve for this year with the proposal. So really next, once we solve for the $33 million and implement those this year, then next year's shortfall is, again, as I stated at the beginning, $29
million. Yeah, the revenue shortfall
right.
for this year.
Yeah.
You know, it's not cost different. What we take care of this year will roll over into
yes.
next year.
Right.
So that it'll take it back down to that projected additional revenue shortfall for next
correct.
Year. So let's
we'll
don't,
be able to address
let's don't
that.
Fixate on the 61,
right.
$62 million because that's a number that will take care of itself
right.
To a large degree as we take care of this year's problem.
Correct.
Councilmember Higgins.
Question regarding the quality of life tax.
Yes.
Do you have that quantified? You know, because everything is dropped, so that quality of life portion, how much?
It just about mirrors the general fund, the general sales tax. So you've got the same drop in it that you do.
Right.
In, yes.
So, I mean, do you have that quantified? If like, how much money is it just for quality of life taxes dropped?
Well, I do have that. For 08-09. And I don't have that because I combined the two. I'm
right.
sorry. I can get that for you.
Okay, thanks.
And for the purposes of this discussion, Councilmember Higgins, and going forward, we're really looking at the quality of life tax now as a combination with our general fund. It's really the activities of the quality of life, the police officers, the fire stations, everything have been either started to be built or have been put in place and are continuing operations at this point. So we really view it now as just part of our overall general fund.
But they were designated funds, right?
Right.
So
and
we
they
do
will,
track them separately.
And they still will be tracked.
Right. Okay.
But they have the same resource pressures? That
yeah.
The general,
oh, no, I totally understand.
On the capital side will be tracked, but frankly, we are going to be the labor side, the number of the officers are going to be just folded into the general fund. And at some point, the quality of life portion of the sales tax just becomes a portion of the general fund. We're holding on to that separately today because we had to build capital projects with the quality of life. And so we had to collect a reserve of funds and capital and then wait till we had the sufficient dollars to then go build the facilities. Once all those facilities are completed, really our obligations then will, the long-term continuing obligations are related to the labor cost in police and fire. And so ultimately at some point, keeping them separate really doesn't
Sort of like your mama said, you had the steak and you had the potatoes, and when you ate them, they all ended up in the same place, right?
But
exactly what my mom said.
Was this not true that it also was quality of life funds for library, extended library hours when we first voted on that, and other type issues? That was my understanding way back when you weren't here when the quality of life funds were voted in.
In essence, we're in the maintenance mode now.
Yes.
So the fact that we have a sales tax problem, we have to adjust for the whole sales tax problem. So it's I don't know how you would say you get it from this and you get it from that, because it's all really one operation.
Well, it's really easy. I mean, if we have a point, what is it, 0.25%
yes.
quality of life sales tax, and you get so much in, well, 0.25% of that is for quality of life issues that we voted
okay,
for.
Okay, here's a good way to measure that. Right now, our operations budget exceeds the amount we bring in quality of life resources.
Right. Okay.
That's probably the best way to state it, for you understand what we're talking about on the resource issue.
Well, I do, but I'm just saying, when you say you're just going to roll it all in and it's not, you still should know, and it should be able to still say to your citizens that we're still using the quality of life funds for the things you voted for.
We will keep track of those. We keep a functional code level. We can track all those by the functional code level. We will just put it
yeah,
in the...
But we are not going to
correct.
Tag a police officer. That's a quality of life police officer. At the end of the day, it's a resource. We can track... At some point, we need to get beyond the fact that it's a quality of life dollar and it's a general fund dollar, because in the long term, it's all blended together, a police officer, a firefighter, whatever. Once we've built the projects, really that quality of life dedicated separation, I think, is there. Beyond that, quality of life moves and goes up and down, just like the general fund
sales
tax.
The quality of life, you said, rolling it into the general fund is never going to pay for someone in your office. It's always going to pay for the mm-hmm. things.
We can always say, here's the quality of life dollars, but I don't know. Yeah, well, we can have this discussion. We talked about just rolling it into the general fund at some point, because at this point now, that labor cost that was initially hired and brought in, as Chuck is saying, those costs are well beyond the quality of life dollars. So the quality of life dollars are not getting, frankly, the same number of positions that it got when it was set up.
So in a sense, we're in those positions, we're actually subsizing
the
quality
general fund
of life
is subsidizing
from the general
quality
fund.
Of life. So the
it started out where the quality of life created the ability to get those positions, and now over the years we've got those positions, we've got those resources,
right.
And the general fund is now actually subsidizing
absolutely.
What the quality of life created. Okay.
The next slide gets into probably the most painful part of this. We've broken into categories, three categories. Of where our reduction in force is occurring based on the previous page's summarization. Professional and admin support, almost 181 full-time equivalents. And public safety, sworn and civilian, 88 positions or FTEs. Skilled technical workers, 77.4 for a total of 346. And then we're talking some potential outsourcing of an additional 43 full-time equivalents.
And that would be privatization of city services.
Correct. Yes.
Where city employees will be basically turned over to the private sector, and those services will be provided by a non-city company.
And that's a total of 389 full-time equivalents.
Mayor, Council, currently we have just over 4,000 full-time equivalent employees in the city, so this is almost 10%.
Brian, that number includes utilities, though, right?
It does.
Yes.
Okay. Councilmember Summers?
Are these all existing positions? How many are filled versus how many are open?
Approximately 75% of these positions would be filled.
Okay.
Councilmember Higgins?
Brian, can you give an example of a potential outsourcing position? Just
Like if we're doing something in a maintenance setting now where we're mowing parks or something of that nature, we bring in a contractor to do that work for us instead of us as employees doing
it. And
that.
So the person that's actually a City of Mesa employee would then be laid off and be hired hopefully by the company that's doing it? Or
That's a possibility. It's no set obligation. Right. The largest one that's potentially sitting out here is we are exploring the option of outsourcing municipal security.
Okay.
So that would have a significant reduction in number of positions that would be city employees.
Now, whether those employees would be taken on by the new company would be up to the new company to make that decision.
Thank you.
Councilmember Summers?
Isn't there a way we could encourage them to take them on?
Certainly. I think we typically do that, encourage them to look at those employees because they're familiar with whatever service that they're bringing on.
Okay. Yeah, well, anything we can do in that arena.
Councilmember Higgins?
The sworn office, sworn and civilian reductions, are the sworn reductions only open seats that we've never filled, or they're actual people that will be leaving?
Mayor and Councilmember Higgins, we are not proposing that any filled sworn position be terminated, laid off. We will look at current vacant sworn positions, and then, as I said, this is a 18-month plan. So through attrition, whether it's a police sworn position or fire sworn position, that we will then, once that position is vacated through retirement or separation from the city, then that position will be then taken, eliminated. That's why it took us quite a while to kind of get these numbers, because we had to figure out and calculate, you know, the natural rate of attrition over a period of time and how soon those positions would become available. Then we could realize that saving. So this reflects the assumption of what's going to happen over the next 18 months. So a lot of this, many of these positions may not occur by January 9th. And it's not just in public safety. There are some programs, for example, in Parks and Recreation that are currently underway, or we've already completed registration. We will continue to fulfill our obligations under those programs, but once those programs are completed, then there will be positions that will be further reduced at a future time.
Councilmember Richens?
Also, in regards to public safety, I think we have an academy class in right now.
As
How
I
does
said,
it affect them? Do they have jobs
no,
coming out of the academy?
No, absolutely not.
No, they don't have jobs coming out of academy?
They will not be affected. Part of your question. We are not going to be laying off any sworn position, whether they're currently in the field or they're in the academy. Those that are in the academy will be able to come out of the academy and fill positions that are currently there. But as we see retirements or other separations by individuals, then those positions will be eliminated.
Councilman Fenter.
Thank you. All these positions that we're talking about currently on this this page are general fund related positions. Is that correct?
This is citywide.
Citywide. So the enterprises are also included in this.
There are limited enterprise.
We took a few positions in order to get that savings that we showed, that $5 million from the transfer. From the, we did reduce some positions there and created savings that we're now taking as part of this overall picture.
Thank you. Councilmember Higgins?
Could you give an example of a skilled technical worker?
Well, a lot of our planning people are skilled technical workers. That's the significant portion of this group is planning and building safety.
So these aren't just like tech people. These are like four-year university degree folks when
yes,
we say
they are.
Okay.
Mayor, Council, let me just kind of conclude real quickly. This has not been easy, as you can tell. Nobody wants to make these recommendations. However, let me say, there are opportunities in this proposal that, frankly, sometimes difficult times push you to make some, really have to look at things differently. And we understand that this is going to be a challenge to accept this change. But we do think that there are some opportunities for Mesa to lead the way in finding some different approaches to providing services. We maybe are forced more to do that because of the economics, but we think there's some great opportunities here to create some new models of service that where we can continue to provide the vast array of municipal services across the board. As you saw here, we were able to make these cuts without necessarily closing down specific services or facilities, I should say, because we are eliminating some services. And we are looking at new models. We have challenged ourselves. Yes, we're stepping out there. Yes, we're doing something new. We are being bold. We are trying to be cautious. We have done it in a calculated way. We have not done it in a rash way. Many of the ideas that are here didn't just get thought up in the last 3 months. We have talked and discussed some of these for some time. This was an opportunity, though, to bring those to the council. At the end of the day, Mesa will continue to provide remarkable services to the citizens of Mesa. They will have a dedicated workforce that will make sure that we will work hard to deliver this. It will be difficult during the next months ahead as we go through this transition, but we're committed to working with all our employees to make that transition as easy as possible, as well as continue to provide the services that we've done so well. So our plan is to lay this out today, take it home, be thankful for what you have this coming weeks, and then we'll come back in December and we'll take every opportunity Mondays and Thursdays to bring the departments here to discuss with you what they're planning on doing, the new model, the new level services, and hopefully have that discussion through, I think, December 15th is the Thursday?
18th.
And that would be hopefully that we've been able to provide you as much information as possible by then, with idea that the majority of these proposals would be implemented by January 9th. We have given notice to many employees of their positions being proposed for reduction, and they've been notified that January 9th would be that day. Obviously, we can keep talking about those days, but we felt like it was important for us to communicate to the employees. The longer we delay, the more cuts we'll have to take in other areas. But we appreciate your time. Be glad to answer any more questions, and then otherwise we look forward to bringing the departments forward first part of December. Thank you.
Councilmember Summers.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll just make a brief comment, then Chris, I'm going to have some specific questions or comments for you. First of all, a lot of folks have been asking me how things have been going in the city lately and how interesting is it to be a council member at this time. And so it's been extremely difficult because we've seen two sides of Mesa right now. In one respect, we've had a lot of excitement with what's going on around the Williams Gateway, the Fink's Mesa Gateway Airport and that entire region. And we are a city on the verge of incredible growth and opportunity out there. And what we have coined effectively is 21st century desert urbanism. And yet, 2 short weeks later, we sit here at this table and we discuss what seems to be Detroit-style slash and burn budget tactics in order to face a very real fiscal reality that isn't just for Mesa, but in this event is global. And it creates a problem with some of these cuts because not only do we have to adjust to the new fiscal reality that may have an 18-month time frame, but we have to look beyond that and how are we going to accommodate this incredible growth that we anticipate? And we are cutting departments that are going to be absolutely necessary for that growth. We are cutting economic development by at least 3 positions. We are cutting potentially planning and rolling it into a new department. We are losing senior members of our staff with an incredible degree of experience. And I'm not just talking about necessarily experience with this city, but who have perhaps come from other cities or the private sectors and moved in, and we're going to be losing technical expertise and education and their background. And at a time when we start to, I really believe Mesa is going to be in a position to spring out of this recession rather than just emerge from it. At a time when we're springing forward and growing, we're going to be lacking in those skills, and we're going to be bringing on new people and trying to train them and trying to educate them. And what are we going to lose? We may never know what we're going to lose in opportunities when that happens because we don't have in place the people that we need to help make this work and help economic development. That's my comment. For questions, sorry guys, I got questions. I'm just going to hit some of the big ones. We mentioned that there's going to be a 2% across the board pay decrease for all employees. That plus the COLA loss will save 170 jobs, which I think is noble. So, Chris, is the city manager's office included in that, and is the council included in that pay decrease also? And if we're not, how do we get to share in that pain?
Mayor, Council members, we always propose that this will affect all employees. And whether they are a chartered employee, I'm not sure if that's the right term, a charter employee or not, we would have, if we have to require a action of the council to do that, we would do that. And certainly we can address that as far as the council's reduction at the same time, too.
Well, one vote. To the issue of the fire department and the police department, a comment that was made was that we are going to, and I'm going to paraphrase it, we're going to try to keep the operations online, keep the boots on the ground so that the services that are directed to our customers, the fire, medical, and policing service, and are not going to be impacted. But some of the cuts that I've seen in the details seem antithetical to that statement. And in, specifically, when we look at for the fire department, there should be absolutely there should be a clear understanding that we are reducing services. We're talking about taking three fire companies out of service. That's three pumps, three trucks that we will not have for fire situations, and replacing them with two-person medical trucks. That could work for the majority of our calls, given that they're medical calls, and many of them are not advanced life support calls, but we also need to be very clear that that is an increase in risk. We are running a statistics game based on number of fires, number of EMS. What are the odds? We're playing Vegas odds with taking companies out of service and changing a model. I wouldn't necessarily have a big issue with that change in model if we were Scottsdale, where the risk of fire is significantly decreased by the different sets of fire codes that they have in place on every building that they build. But we don't have that model. We have older strip malls up and down Main Street that seem to be burning on an increased level, apartments that are burning. We have, and I'm going to have to take East Mesa as an example. I'm for one, hate separating East Mesa and West Mesa, but there's a difference in public safety. Our police department out there has the largest of the protection zone in East Mesa. We have the fewest fire stations in East Mesa. 219, which is the new fire station in Southeast Mesa that we are proposing to build, will service an area where on the other side of that there is no mutual aid agreement. If we run short on the west side or the south side, Gilbert, Chandler, Tempe, based on mutual aid agreements, can pick it up. On the east side, there's nobody to help pick that up on that side of town. And if you run a house fire with one fire truck out of every fire station, you can run that house fire, drain four fire stations, and have nobody available to run the heart attack call. It's an absolute increase in risk. So not to make light of a situation, but if we run that house fire and somebody has a heart attack, I'm going to tell you, call Domino's Pizza and call the fire department and see which one beats it, 30 minutes or less, because it's going to take a while to get some folks out there. On the PD issue with on the street, the issue that concerns me the most is the overtime shortage. We're trying to lock our folks in to a 40-hour week and reduce overtime, which under most circumstances is a noble cause. You think overtime, that's what we should be trying to reduce. But I think there is a big difference between discretionary overtime and operational overtime. And the police department is really one of those agencies where the overtime that's built in oftentimes is a result of the fact that our officers have to, on overtime, have to end up going down to the court system. The court system doesn't always use them. I'm a fireman in Phoenix. I've been called to the courts on a drunk driving case just so I can sit there so the prosecutor can show that we have our witnesses available on scene. It requires that overtime. That's operational overtime. They go back to the streets once they hit those number of hours in order to reduce the overtime. We're going to have to remove them from street and send them home. And so potentially we're going to be running our squads short, which means we're going to be having a delay in response times. Or what if we have a lot of overtime? We've had four fatal accidents this week that require overtime to, in order to properly manage those and document those. And there's just so much paperwork in the police department that has to be done. And if we cut that overtime, I'm afraid that's going to impact policing services. Secondly, I think Councilmember Fenner hit a very good point. We need to take a look at our enterprise funds and see how those are going to be impacted. We need to do those soon because as agencies such as the electrical utility, gas, if they're supposed to generate revenue, I imagine that some of the economic realities right now are going to impact them. Finally, folks, you should understand that some of these cuts that we are proposing, while they make economic sense, there are going to be unintended consequences to these. I thought I had questions, maybe it's just comments.
Yeah. And by the way,
I'm going to stop.
Yeah. We're going to have plenty of time to ask specific questions and make specific comments in the weeks to come. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I do, Chris, want to commend you and your staff. I think this has been a very thoughtful and innovative response to a dramatic situation. And I appreciate the way in which you've developed the proposals, in including everyone in the mix to propose ways to deal with it. And I think that it creates a significant investment by your employees in what's being presented to us. And it really is, again, as I said, very thoughtful. It's innovative in many ways. I think that long-term we will see benefits as a community from a change in operations that we have. But certainly I think there's no mistake that what we're doing is going to see a diminishment of city services that will directly affect the quality of life in our community. And it's almost ironic. I think our city staff has done such an amazing job over the last 4 years, 5 years, of hiding the pain from the public and doing more with less, that I think some members of the public simply haven't realized the extent to which the city has been under a financial strain for such a long period of time. So I do commend you for what you've done. Having served for a long time on the council, I've experienced something like this once before when after 9/11, and the council at that time and city staff really were hit very quickly by dramatic cultural and economic change that came without warning. And that demonstrated to us once again the fragility of the system that we have in Mesa with a revenue model that was developed in another place and time in World War II when Mesa was very different. And again, starting in the late 1980s, some thoughtful members of our community began raising issues of concern. That was an economic downturn as well in the late 1980s, and encouraged the council and the city to closely examine the revenue model that we have and the expense model that we have. Shortly before 9/11, again, I had the experience of seeing what happened to our revenues with the repeal of the sales tax on food. That was an initiative effort led by our friends at the VBO in response primarily to the Cardinals Stadium issue. And that has had, as we see, again, a significant long-term impact on us. Again, many other cities collect that sales tax on food. And it's remarkable what we've been able to do without that tool in our toolbox as well. But after 9/11, the city formed the Financing the Future Committee, which again, made a very thorough study of the strengths and weaknesses of our system, of our operations, our expenditures, and our revenues. And unfortunately forecast that this very scenario would happen, that the city is very subject to dramatic cultural or economic changes because our model really is a model that almost elevates risk above reason. And so it creates a very challenging situation for the city manager and your staff and the council. That committee outlined a series of actions that the city looked at, should look at, to help stabilize revenues and minimize the effects of drastic changes in the economy. And so as we continue our discussions over the next several months, I hope we again go back to look at that. The mayor, I think, had an excellent suggestion earlier this year to reconstitute that committee. I think will be very helpful to you and to us to continue the work to, again, look at the overall picture and the structure of what we have. With regard to the specific changes that we've heard today, the only comment I really have at this point is that from my position as chair of the Public Safety Committee, I do agree with Councilmember Summers that I've got some reservations about the change in the delivery model in the fire service, and I hope that we're prepared to continue that discussion to look at all alternatives that can help maintain effective service to the public, as well as achieving the same or greater revenue savings for us as a community. The only question I had, and it wasn't clear from the material, is I'm trying to understand what will our fund balance be with the changes that we're proposing. Is it staying the same, or you alluded to you might be able to use, are you using some of that for the cushion? I didn't understand where that would go.
That's a good question, and Chuck can correct me wrong. We're actually absorbing some of the shortfall through the fund balance, but not allowing the fund balance to drop below the council policy of maintaining it within that 8-10% level. And the reason I say we're able to use some of it, because we actually started out with a fund balance that was higher than the 10%. I don't remember what that number was, but we've used that to allow, we're going to be planning that in, anticipating to absorb some of that fund balance, but not going below the stated objective of.
When you say you've used that up, because we've encountered revenue shortfalls already,
right?
And we'll continue for the next month and a half through December 31st before these cost savings kick in, and so those are being basically funded out of our savings account.
That is correct.
Which is our fund balance.
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, Councilmember Higgins.
The one concern I have is what I think is going to be a brain drain on the city, as we let our younger, highly educated workforce, because of their lack of time with the city, you know, they get to be dropped first. And I will just share the experience from 1987 when General Motors did the same model, and I was one of those younger people way back when. And all the younger engineers took the buyout because they knew they could move on and find a new job somewhere else. And, you know, 20 years later, you can look at the model of what happened to General Motors. Well, if you knew that, you know, they got rid of the innovation, and not that, you know, they just got rid of all their young technical people. And they're paying the price 20 years later. So I don't want to be in that position where, due to how we do things, we're letting all the innovators leave the city. And then 3, 5, 20 years from now, we say, oh, wow, why do we do that? So thank you.
Okay, we're going to deviate a little bit from normal practice because of the unique situation. Normally, we don't take outside comments until the public comment, but we have a request to speak by Brian Jeffries, who's with the United Firefighters. Ms. Jeffries, I'm going to allow you to speak now so that we can do it as part of this program, and so if there is some interaction, we can go ahead, and if you were in the public comment, we wouldn't be able to do that as much. So. You got 3 minutes, and if there's any questions, we'll be able to do that.
Thank you for that, Mr. Mayor. My name is Brian Jeffries. I'm the president of the United Mesa Firefighters Association. Members of City Council, Mr. Mayor, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'll be very brief, and I just want you to know that when you sit around in this forum and you hear a lot of the proposals that you hear, they all come from the 7th and 8th floor of City Hall. I'd like you to know that you have options, which I think you would all want when you're making these significant considerations that you need to make before you today. The proposals that are coming from the fire department and city management regarding public safety, from the fire department point of view, 80% of them are right on the money. They do a very good job. They're not good for us long term, but in the short term, they get us through this dire economic situation. 20% of them, let me be crystal clear, 20% of them absolutely compromise the public safety of this community. It will be labeled as innovation, and it's a retraction of 20 years of progress in emergency medicine. We left the type of service model that is going to be proposed to you in our specific council agendas coming in the future for very good reason: progress, evolution. We use people like emergency room doctors to create our algorithms. We use trauma physicians to help us create the guidelines that we have developed and been such at the cutting edge on in this community to protect our citizens. And what I'm here to tell you today is that what will come before you in specificity moving forward will compromise public safety. It is a very big step backwards. It is not innovation. What I also tell you, though, fire department employees are very dedicated to this city, and we very much understand the situation we're in. And what I'm here to tell you is that fire department employees, where the rubber hits the road, have been working diligently for the last couple months to come up with our own ideas and ways that we can make cuts to give you the same kind of financial cost to get us through this dire situation. And so what I'm here to tell you is, when you consider the proposals that come from city management regarding what to do with the fire department and paramedic services moving forward, please give us the opportunity. Please give us the opportunity to provide our own proposals, which we think you will like, and we think will provide some broader considerations and some real innovations moving us forward. They do not eliminate the TRVs, which have been one of our greatest innovations to adapt to the medical responses that we've been dealing with. They absolutely save every engine company in this city. In addition, they provide an engine company to provide service in Mr. Summers' district, which has egregious response times. It doesn't provide for any layoffs in the fire department, and it also doesn't punish our lowest paid employees through a merit freeze. So all I ask is that two things for your consideration. One is you give us an opportunity to give you our proposals. And number two, if the proposals move forward to your desk for consideration as currently being considered by city management, that you let us bring in trauma physicians, emergency room physicians, national emergency response experts, former fire chiefs, current fire chiefs, and all kinds of members of the community who are with their families today and who wouldn't be if it wasn't for the major advancements of paramedic care that have been provided over this community over the last 20 years when we abandoned the very service model that is being proposed to you by city management. Thank you for your time, Mr. Mayor, and members of the council.
Thank you, Brian. As we wrap this up, as you can tell, and I will say this, Brian, I hope you do come to the table with your suggestions, and soon, because if there's only one proposal on the table, then there's only one proposal. And I know I'll be listening, and I'm sure everyone else will also. But I'd like to sum up a lot of things that have been said. As I said in the beginning, we're going through some changes. This is a crisis, but out of crisis comes opportunity. I was asked yesterday by a member of the media if all the bluster in a campaign about building a better Mesa and making things better had been basically thrown by the wayside with this crisis. And I said, absolutely not. You know, we're going to end up in the same location. We're just going to have to go down a little bit different road. So a little bit of a detour, a little bit of a path adjustment, but we're going to end up in the same place because that is where this community is destined to be. However, we have to realize that that path that we haven't totally chosen has a lot of potholes, has a lot of obstacles, and it requires change. I will be anxious to see what anyone has, especially those in our public safety, police and fire. I will tell you, if it's the same model, I'm not interested in hearing the same thing that we were doing yesterday, the day before, unless it helps us get to the end and deal with this. I think we would be blind to say that we can continue to do things across the board, including public safety, the same way tomorrow that we're doing today and expect the same results. That simply is not reality. I know that there will be a lot of emotion. A lot of people have vested interest. The community has a vested interest, especially as public safety is concerned. So there will be a lot of emotion. I hope we look at facts, data, and we keep our minds open that there is certainly more than one way to skin the cat. But let me be perfectly clear, the cat is going to get skinned. And I know this council will look at different ways. I know the staff has certainly looked at a lot of different ways. There is no one perfect solution to our problems, but we will solve them. We will move forward. We're not going to surrender. We're not going to give up. And staying the course of how we've been doing things, to me, is tantamount to surrender, because it will not get us to where we need to get. So I want to be perfectly clear that that I think that we're looking at making changes, not just because we have to, but because the situation has presented itself where, on one hand, we need to, but on the other hand, we must, in order to deal with the new world and also deal with our destiny, which is to take us to that better Mesa and the great community that we can be. And that's going to take some change in thinking, and that's going to take some open minds, and that's going to take, on all sides, looking at different ideas. I think I credit Mr. Brady. Thank you for shaking things up as far as looking at new ways. There are some, I beg to say, fairly radical ideas in here, which we need to look at. Radical not in the sense that they're revolutionary or going against them, but they help us to get over the hump and get to where we need to get. I look forward over the next month to some vibrant debate and vibrant discussion. I hope it will be taken in the context of how we get to that next level and how we get through this temporary challenge and get to that next level, and we continue to build a better Mesa in a way that creates this great community. And so I look forward to the coming weeks and having this ongoing discussion. All right, next item on the agenda. Thank you very much, by the way. Thank you for all. The next item, hear reports on our meetings and our conferences attended. I would like to report on one thing. I had the privilege of attending a ceremony at the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian Community, who were so gracious in their in sharing over $500,000 in grants to Mesa-based organizations and the Mesa Public Schools to continue with very worthwhile programs. Our Mesa Library is one of the organizations that was funded with a grant. We'll continue to seek out these opportunities. And thank you to the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian Community for the way that they the thought that they put into it and the work they put into that. So that was a privilege of mine. Councilmember Richens?
On Monday, a few of us attended at Arizona State University the Arizona 2030 conference put on by ASU, talking about growth in the future and some of the challenges we're up against as far as infrastructure development. The mayor served on a panel of elected officials, and I have to admit, he was one of the stars of the show. I thought he did a great job representing Mesa and representing innovation. So not to suck up too bad, but I was pretty impressed.
Doesn't take much to impress you, does it? Okay, Mr. Brady, schedule of meetings.
First of all, have a great, happy Thanksgiving. Be thankful for what you have. And then what we'll do is we'll come back on December 1st, and we will begin having, that's right, thank you. We do have our special, we have the canvas of the election on November 24th at 4 o'clock. Thank you. And then we will begin reviewing the proposals, the changes in services and programs beginning December 1st. We'll anticipate starting before the council meeting that day. We'll meet on the 1st, the 4th, and we'll continue from there. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any more requests to speak from citizens present? Okay. There being none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So
moved by Councilmember Summers, second by Councilmember Higgins. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.